Welcome to IMTV. I'm Alan Keyes, and this is Let's Talk America. All my guests, I guess I always start out in a way that suggests that all my guests are really special people, because I believe that they are. But today I will say it with a remarkable increase in gusto, because today I'm going to be talking to someone who, if I were to say so, qualifies as an expert in a whole range of things that have to do with the most vital things that we're liable to be facing and are already facing as a people, in which we're going to have to navigate the shoals and the pitfalls in such a way as to try to assure that the bad guys who are trying to overthrow our regime do not have corresponding people who get all enthusiastic about going after things in ways that overthrow our form of government. And I think that may be the hardest challenge that a lot of Americans haven't awakened to yet, about what the future holds. My guest is James Grundvig, and he's somebody who has written and spoken and is well known for his analysis of a whole range of things, from COVID all the way over to how we deal with what is essentially the self-emancipated disregard for our constitutional system that now seems to characterize a whole lot of our politicians and the people who are part of the bureaucracy, whom we call the deep state. It kind of was involved with and led to things like the Durham Report, where people are perhaps finally being awakened to some aspects of what is going on. But I think it's still the case that a large number of Americans don't realize that our way of life at the fundamental level is threatened. And this notion that, as Lincoln said, we have a government of, by, and for the people, well, I think other people have been acting as if that was something they threw overboard a long time ago. And the question is, are we going as a people to awaken now to the danger? Because I think it's throbbing and doing violence to us out there in so many different ways, so that we can, here at this what could be last stage of our fight for that self-government, preserve it. That's what's always on my mind. Welcome to the show. I'm really happy to have you here. And the first question I wanted to ask was, you know, in the midst of all the things that are going on right now, most of which I think are threatening, as I just said, I'm wondering how somebody who has the broad perspective that you have and have written about sees the overall picture and what will be, in fact, the plight or salvation of the self-governing people of the United States, which we are supposed to be.
Well, I think the Durham Report did everyone a favor. I know there's a lot of people in our Patriot movement, alternative news movement, truth movement, that disagreed, like, oh, he didn't recommend anyone to arrest. Statute of limitations expired. Well, statute of limitations doesn't expire on treason, sedition, or murder. So think of Seth Rich. He was murdered. Many others have disappeared for a variety of reasons. So none of that goes away. I think a Durham Report, in my view, my understanding is, it once and for all, unequivocally, went beyond the big media gaslighters, the big media censors, and said the deep state does exist. Here it is, people. Welcome to the show, right? So it kind of like it was a final gavel on this. This deep state absolutely exists, and there's nothing the media can talk about in that regard.
Well, as you're looking at, because I think you're exactly right there in terms of, and it seems to have inspired a response in some elements of our legislature, particularly, of course, in the House of Representatives now, which is in Republican hands. As you see those reactions, have they started moving us toward the right path to deal with what we're looking at so that these people don't continue to get away with acting as if there is no bridle to be exerted to call them to account for their betrayal of our public good and of our, what is supposed to be the integrity of our national government as a people?
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. So what is that bridle? I believe the Law of War Manual was, I don't even believe it, it was actually happened. The Law of War Manual was updated. It's like a 120-year-old document, go back to the 1890s, where how does the United States, as we the people, right, the government, how do we conduct war on an international scale? What are the rules of engagement? What are the rules and laws of war? It was updated on the 12th of June. It took 11 months. in 2015. What was very interesting is 2 days later, candidate Donald Trump came down the escalator to announce his presidency. I believe that's no accident. People call it coincidence, but I don't see it that way. One of the first things President Trump did in his first year was invest $500 million into Guantanamo Bay, not for a hotel or casino, but to expand a 13,000 migrant city, tent city, to build new barracks for 5,000 additional Marines, to add 900 beds to a prison. Then 2 years later, he built a second courthouse and an expanded evidence room. So these things are signs to me that are not conspiratorial in nature, that we're going to go to a different venue when the stuff hits the fan. And what do I mean by that? Well, Articles 11.3 and 11.4 in the Law of War Manual talk about belligerent occupants. They were given the Biden regime, let me just call it the Biden regime. They've been given 1 year to vacate Washington, D.C. You basically are Manchurianicated. You've stolen the election. You got 1 year to vacate. And if you don't, at some point, the military can step in and remove them.
Well, let me ask a question, because two things I think bedevil us a little bit because of the nature of our constitutional self-government. Though I agree, I think that with all the things I have seen over the last several years, people who I respect going over what happened in the election in 2020, I think it's pretty clear that the Democrats managed to connive their way to an election that stunk to high heaven. Yes. But that election was widely accepted by voices hither, thither, and yon that represented, to my consternation and disappointment, both parties. I think that there were people motivated on both sides because they just wanted to get rid of Donald Trump and to certify, oh, Donald Trump is gone, that's over with, and so forth and so on. So in that respect, I think they walked a walk that ostensibly corresponded to a reaction that then validated the election. Whether or not it was what it was supposed to be, I think is still an open question, closed in the minds of a lot of us in the direction of that it was hijacked, but not closed in the minds of a lot of others. But we are still here now. Our regular processes are moving forward toward what I think will be an electoral repudiation of the regime that came in that 2024 election, if we can manage to have honest elections. And we'll see about that. So I think that's going to be challenge number one. But second, as we have to deal with the consequences, I think we have to respect the fact that, you know, our Constitution still holds. If somebody wants to accuse you of a crime in America, they must be accused and tried by due process of law. And unless war is actually declared by the American people in the Congress, that due process of law consists in going before our courts and ultimately before the Supreme Court. It doesn't consist of military tribunals or anything like it. When you're dealing with civilian actors, it does not. And so two questions. Do you foresee an open declaration of war, and how would that be brought about or not? And then what would be the substitute for it if you're going to try an alternative? Because I think it would be unsafe to move forward in a way that didn't have a clear constitutional justification.
Well, let's start with the Constitution and President Trump. He's never conceded the 2020 election, did he?
No.
So he still has the opportunity somehow through some legal process. I'm not a lawyer or constitution, but he has some process, I believe, to still, discredit the Biden regime and clearly expose them for what it is. So that is still out there. That is I call that a wild card. I'll put it aside. Let's talk about what we're really dealing with here. Ukraine is the answer in a lot of your questions. Ukraine is a proxy war. Our military is as much infiltrated as our uniparty in Washington, D.C. They're filled with belligerent occupants. We don't have to go into all of it, but just take that as a possibility. You have NATO, which I guess one of the first chief of staff of NATO was a Nazi ringer. So that is a Fourth Reich organization, in my opinion, even though my parents are from Norway. I'm first-generation American. So I'm seeing a proxy war being carried out. It's no longer about, there's no peace brokers in the West. There's nobody to go to the table with Putin. Let's end this nonsense. It's over, right? They blew up a dam a few days ago. It has consequences. The media, the NATO media, let me call it the NATO media, is blaming Russia for destroying its own dam to starve its own people in Crimea and other places. I don't buy any of that at all. So we're now have a context. We had the destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline. We have the destruction of this dam. And we've had now a drone attacks consistently on Russia, trying to poke the Russian bear. And at some point, that has consequences. And I believe we're going to some kind of nuclear escalation. So at some point, a nuclear escalation that's going to be pointing nuclear weapons, and Russia's already rolled them out in Belarus. They already aimed them to the West. And they got the nuclear submarines in the Atlantic. At some point, we're going to a nuclear showdown, and America's going to be drawn into it. So at some point, Congress might be forced into declaring war because it might have no other choice. That is my belief.
Well, I think, I noticed one of the things I was reading this morning, that a group of people who represent, you know, ex-diplomats and foreign service people and other elements of the international-oriented bureaucrats, they have come out with a statement that I must confess kind of resonated with me, because I've never quite understood why we have taken such an interest in the Ukraine, to be frank. And I think that even as the old USSR broke up, we should have understood that there were going to be sensitivities, and European countries and America clearly stated that they were aware of these sensitivities on the part of Russia, and that we had no intention of trying to expand NATO and make them feel all isolated within those parameters. I'm wondering, because, yes, did we kind of ignore that by allowing certain countries into NATO? Yes, but the countries that came into NATO were countries that were associated with Russia because they had taken advantage of the fruits of World War II to take countries that had not been associated with Russia and essentially conquer them. I thought we had grounds, moral grounds and reasonable grounds and so forth and so on for saying, no, that's not part of your patrimony, so we won't have to honor that. If these folks come to us and say they want to join with us, we will respond. What I have never understood, and maybe you understand it better, Ukraine does not fit that pattern. I'm sorry. Ukraine was an integral part of Russia predating USSR. And for us to act as if that's not the case, and that Russia has no relations, no stake, and etc., because Ukrainian nationalism has always been there, that's not exactly true. There have always been Ukrainian nationalists. But the power and the czars were particularly careful, using the Cossacks in certain ways and other people. A lot of people forget the Cossacks are identified heavily with the Ukraine. That means they were working in such a way that the Ukraine became an integral part of the protection of the Russian monarchical power structure, and they benefited accordingly. They weren't reluctant participants in the government of monarchical Russia, nor, I think, when the communists came in, was the Ukraine a reluctant participant in the leadership of the...
Right. Wow. Can't hear. I can't hear right now. I got a technical glitch. I didn't touch anything. Right now, Alan, I can't hear you. Still nothing. Can you hear me? Because I can't hear you still. I can try to read your lips and talk to you, but a little bit challenging. What I do want to say about Ukraine, we'll keep the show going, even though I can't hear you technically. Number one, I think Ukraine is a massive cover-up. I think it's been an international hub for the cabal for the last 30 years. There have been a lot of money laundering operations out of human trafficking, things of that nature. So why is the West so impactful to keep the cover on the truce of Ukraine? I believe because if the crimes actually come out, they're going to be horrific in nature. People will be completely shocked. And the truth, that might be part of the wake up, right? As Alan, you and I were talking about, early in the show, Americans are quite not awake yet to the world problems. I mean, to the real problems. And I think Ukraine represents one of those shocking awake moments. A nuclear war, of course, a countdown to one would wake up everybody, right? You're going to your bank, no access to your money anymore, with a change to a CBDC, that would wake up a lot of people. But Ukraine, the horrific truce coming out of there, that I think is the reason. The cabal, the shadow government that runs this world, the elites, are all partaking in this. And they are absolutely afraid that, one, the people are going to realize what the heck has been going on in this world since World War II, right, for the last 75, 80 years. And number two, are our leaders of the world actually involved in this kind of activity? That sounds more like a mafia activity, a Canaanite activity, a Babylonian activity. I think that is kind of really interesting, and that is the reason why they're going all in on Ukraine. It is not, of course they want to defeat Russia, right? I get it. They want to defeat Putin. They want to defeat Russia, but that's not going to happen. They're a nuclear power. They're now Russia's now in bed with China on the BRICS part of it, and they're not going to give up in any size, shape, or form. That is just my belief. Alan, back to you. Something happened here. Okay, what did I tell you?
This was made possible by Brighteon.com. After being deplatformed by YouTube, I built Brighteon.com so that we can speak. All voices of dissent are welcome. Join Brighteon.com now, post your videos today, and start building an audience there where you will not be censored. Brighteon.com.
I'm Dr. Simone Gold, founder of America's Frontline Doctors and GoldCare.com. I love Uncensored Truth on Brighteon TV.
Hey everybody, I'm Brighteon TV. I'm Kash Patel, and you can get my new book, Government Gangsters, at governmentgangsters.com, and check out what we're doing at fightwithkash.com. As we were talking about all the time, it starts and happens at the local level, so please join up and sign the fight. And to everyone watching Brighteon TV, I love your Uncensored Truth format. Please watch it, please help it grow, and we'll see you down the trail.
Hi, my name is Pete Santilli, and you're tuned into Brighteon.tv. I love Uncensored Truth, and I need Uncensored Truth on Brighteon.tv.
Hi, this is Lee Allen Baker, and I love Brighteon TV.
At the Brighteon store, we offer a variety of colloidal silver solutions that we make in Texas using Texas rainwater and specialized circuitry that I personally designed to produce silver ions in purified rainwater. We have a colloidal silver extra strength spray, a silver-based first aid gel, as well as a colloidal silver herbal mouthwash solution that people just rave about. Each one of these is subjected to our...
situation in the Ukraine, what was driving it? What is driving it, I believe, even today? It is the fact that once we made the change in 2020, We were back to a mindset that had led Obama to intervene in the Ukraine in order to overthrow a government that preceded of the present government, and that wasn't so friendly to anti-God, anti-religious premises of Marxist Leninism and all of this as has been the case. And I think that that was part of the problem, that in the Obama era, a commitment to Christianity was anathema, even as today they are trying to make it anathema here in the United States, right? So what happened? Well, what happened was that that got the involvement of a lot of the Democrats in the situation in the Ukraine, and not just a diplomatic involvement, an involvement that resulted in a lot of money changing hands and flowing into the pockets of people who are in the Democrat Party and who therefore have a stake in what is going on in the Ukraine. I think the whole situation we are now in is the result of the fact that there were a lot of these powerful Democratic stakeholders who had something to lose in the situation in the Ukraine, especially if the Russians reacted as they did. So we're looking at a war that's being portrayed as a war that's simply against the Russian war against the Ukraine. And we're supposed to ignore the fact that there were people, including folks higher up in the Democrat-controlled government of the United States in various periods, who wanted to foment this situation in ways that they knew it, I think, were going to aggravate the Russian power. And when we get back after the break, I'll want to hear what James has to say in response to that little analysis, but also what it portends, I think, about our overall situation now in terms of the leadership in the United States and what the stakes are. We'll be back right after this.
SAT123.com. They have put together a really incredible package: emergency backup communication systems, power systems. We've got sat phones, we've got solar panels, and also the big 400 watt solar panel behind us there. And why does this matter? Because, of course, right now we are dealing with massive risk of blackouts, and the power grid is just failing, you know, intermittently, but it's going to get worse because we've also got energy shortages. Think about the lack of coal power, the diesel problems that are happening right now. If you're in the military or the National Guard or Border Patrol or law enforcement and you need to be able to function even when the power grid goes down, or maybe you're a first responder, rescue team, firefighter, paramedic, you name it, you need to know about this equipment. So SAT123.com, folks.
All right, what's up, everybody? My name is Scott Armstrong from Rebunked.News, Pirate Stream Media, The Last American Vagabond, and The Unjected Show, coming at you live in Nashville from the Reawaken America Tour. And you're tuned in to The Uncensored Truth on Brighteon TV.
Hi, I'm Del Bigtree, and thanks for watching Brighteon TV.
The global currency collapse will wipe out the dollar and many other assets, and the only things that will maintain value during the global debt reset are those with intrinsic value that do not require governments, corporations, or markets to make good on their obligations. At the top of this list of intrinsic assets is physical gold and silver. These precious metals have outlasted every failed civilization and government in human history. And they are non-digital, which means they still hold value even if the power grid fails. The Treasure Island Coins and Precious Metals Company is my go-to source for physical precious metals that are delivered securely and discreetly into your hands. Visit BrighteonMetals.com to check their live pricing and in-stock coins and bars. Find out why they are my trusted source for physical metals and why they're the official sponsor of Brighteon.tv. BrighteonMetals.com. The world we once knew is collapsing. We're being warned to expect rolling blackouts, and our political leaders are deliberately shutting down pipelines, fuel refineries, nuclear power plants, and energy exploration. The currency is collapsing, while financial assets are plummeting in value, and the global food supply is being deliberately decimated. To survive this war being waged on humanity, you need more than just regular prepping. You need resilient prepping. And that's the title of my new free audiobook, Resilient Prepping, You can download the entire audiobook and a printable PDF transcript for free right now at resilientprepping.com. Resilient Prepping teaches practical strategies for prepping in three layers: high-tech, low-tech, and no-tech. Resilient Prepping is your ultimate guide to surviving the total collapse of the world as we know it, because that's exactly what globalists are trying to achieve. Download this entire audiobook for free right now at resilientprepping.com.
I feel that Juvent is helping me to get better every day in every way.
That impact is what has been shown to help improve your bone density. Without that impact, you're missing a very important nutrient in your physical conditioning program.
The Juvent Micro Impact System allows the person to create more joint range of motion. Now I know there's a chance that nourishment can take place to that joint.
Get one of these.
Sorry for a few of technical glitches there, but I hope you paid attention. First, to the presentation that was made by my guest, James Grenville, with regard to especially the Ukrainian situation and its background. And then to my little gloss on it as we were moving out when I had a chance to do so. And I would say, James, that perhaps the most useful thing you could do is to continue to examine the consequences. Because I think the Ukraine right now is a great way to get people to start awakening to the fact that we can't take it for granted that people who are saying that they are working for the United States government are necessarily working on behalf of the self-government of the American people and the perpetuation of that constitutional self-government on the basis of respect for our basic rights, our basic God-endowed rights, which we have taken for granted. I think they have other motives, and that their real aim is to produce an ideological change in this country that they're already pursuing on the cultural front.
I think it's very important to understand FTX's role in Ukraine. Because what people don't understand is, I know we sent over $150 billion, $170 billion, maybe $200 billion in the last 16, 17 months to fund the war effort. But in reality, a lot of that money, it was reported even last year in May of last year, a year ago, that that Zelensky and his partners were buying Swiss chalets. Mm. Or were they Swiss chalets for the Ukrainians, or were they actually going to be for retired American politicians who are giving them the money? I have a question mark there. I mean, that's going to play itself out. But then we're learning that FTX collapsed. It was on election day when the CEO of Binance came out, he called himself CZ, when he came out and said he questioned the auditing of, you know, FTX, and they got completely exposed. And then, like a Ponzi scheme, they were imploded. But it was far more than a Ponzi scheme. It was a money laundering operation. U.S. dollars went to Zelensky. Zelensky bought FTT, the coin in FTX. Then Sam Bankman-Fried, he turned around and funded, you know, billions of dollars or millions of dollars into two different Republican Rhino and Democrat super PACs offshore. Mm. So the money, our linear tax dollars went into Zelensky. Zelensky bought FTT. They converted it to dollars. They put them into two different super PACs to dominate the 2022 election. Mm. And this was exposed on election day. And the fallout has been clear. Sam Bankman-Fried is now under house arrest with his parents out in, you know, Berkeley, California. And it is becoming very, very obvious this was a money laundering operation. It wasn't just a Bernie Madoff, make myself rich, buy myself some cars and mansions. It wasn't a Ponzi scheme per se. It is something much more nefarious than that.
See, I think it's a symptom of the fact that we now have a significant element in what we might call our governing kind of participants, right? The people who are participating in our government by various avenues that are, I think, ostensibly constitutionally apt, but that they have then, where they have then used their position in a way that short-circuits the government of, by, and for the people. That's no longer really based on a sense we must represent the common good and common interest and real interest of the American people, but instead they're representing their own and are starting to act like what I think we got a foretaste of during the whole COVID business, which is the transition from a government of, by, and for the people to a government of, by, and for elites who are then essentially, like a lot of these communist powers, dictators over the people, who have amassed wealth and power enough that they feel they are secure in making that transition. Am I wrong?
No, you're definitely right, 100%. Think about the wealth transfer, that massive wealth transfer that took place during the lockdowns of 2020, right? That they were gutting as Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I love the fact he's out as a presidential candidate. He's been censored for 18 years. I know him well because I have a vaccine-injured autistic son. So Bobby coming out and basically saying, hey, they spent $24 trillion in COVID money to gut the middle class. That is it. That is his bottom line to it. And I'm actually agreeing with that. That is a, you know, stripping the power from the people, dominant people with the super wealthy up top. They are richer. We definitely getting poor. You know, inflation's another form of tax. We're getting crushed at that level. Even big tech is laying off hundreds of thousands of people now. So it's really starting to look ugly. So how much longer can big media lie about the actual fragility of our economy? I don't think much longer, right? They're all trying to push us like lemmings into one area. You know, the central digital currency, central bank digital currency. And then we hear about the WHO yesterday coming out with, we're going to follow the EU and have a global vaccine passport. I thought we weren't going there a year ago, but now we're there. It's no longer conspiracy theory. It is now a conspiracy fact. This is what's happening. So they're not only chipping away at American rights, they're chipping away at all free people around the world. They want to control us completely for whatever end game reason.
You see, I think the fact that I think they're not chipping away now, though. That's the one thing I'd say, because I think there's a wholesale assault going on. One element of which is the concomitant effort to what you've already spoken about that's going on at the WHO to essentially turn our healthcare system into a system of domination, a system in which basically it provides the excuse for depriving people of what otherwise would be understood to be their God-endowed unalienable right to make decisions for themselves about certain critical areas of their life. So they're attacking our ability to make and control our own money, and meanwhile, by attacking our ability to make judgments about our own health, they are in fact constructing a tyrannical oligarchy that's going to hold us enchained to what will essentially be ever fomenting fears that they are able to rouse to keep us in check. That's a recipe for the total enslavement of the American people. Do you think that, as you and I are talking about it here, I think it has grown more and more evident that this is going on and voices are being raised about it. What is your appraisal of how that understanding is getting out there on our Americans in a position where you think there enough of people are going to wake up to it?
Well, I think people have to wake up to it. So at what point does the CDC overplay its hand, right? So, for instance, I'm reading this morning that, we got the next pandemic, but it's going to be a plague. It's going to be more bacteria. It's not going to be a virus. And that this bacteria has got a 50% death rate. So here we go again. They show us some CGI of a bacteria saying it's coming. It's in the Gulf states where I live down in Florida, along with the other states all the way over to Texas. It's coming from the sea somehow. And they're just going to continue to push this, right? They're pushing Marburg. They didn't want to offend primates, so they changed monkeypox to mpox. And they're trying to see what is, so I think they're putting this out there to collect public sentiment back. This has all been about what can they get away with. So think of the global elites capturing all of this data, and we go all the way back to lockdowns. They want to see, you know, what's the breaking point for people, right? You know, we close your restaurants, you know, this is closed, your business is closed. Oh, but these you know, big stores are open, and people are like, wait, hold, it's not a virus, right? And then there's the social distancing, and then it's the mask wearing, and all the truth about ivermectin and masks are all coming out with actual real studies, not Fauci studies, but real studies that show they overplayed their hand. But how much longer are people going to allow this to happen? I think a lot of them are kind of due to the, you know, the double dose and booster shots. I think if their pineal gland has been kind of calcified. I don't, you know, so either they're living in fear, or they've actually been dumbed down in a way, or conditioned or programmed in a way not to critically think. So a lot of people are not awake, and they won't be awake until a shock event happens. That's what I believe. The shock event could be the nuclear war we discussed. It could be the banking crisis. But at some point, I think people have to wake up in a giant wave, a tsunami. And when that happens, that is the absolute fear of the elites of the world, because they will not be in power much longer when that happens.
If I can say so, and I would be very interested in whether you think this is a worthwhile preoccupation, but it's in a positive way. Because I think one area where they may have overplayed their hand is what I think is the coordinated attack on the family that's been going on. And I think, contrary to what might have been their expectations, I think that attack is one of those things that people in a kind of visceral way understand the danger of. They understand what's being taken from them. Because what's being taken from them is their children. And these people are starting even to talk as if children do not belong to their parents. That is to say, they are not our most precious belongings. I don't know how many times I've heard real parents say that in their lives, their children are their most precious belongings, their most precious gift from God, and the opportunity to influence and raise them, and the satisfaction of doing so properly, is an important part of the satisfaction of their existence. I know that because I've experienced that. And for good, for worse and better sometimes, because you have to go through a little travail if you're going to quit that. So I do see that there are prongs of the attack, which I think they might have overestimated, including all this LGBTQ stuff that I think is essentially meant to defunctionalize the family. Because if you're talking in that realm where the only purpose of human sexuality is self-gratification, the family has no meaning in that context.
No, it has no meaning at all. I'm with you on that completely.
So do you think that's going to be one of the awakening resources, because I already think the awakening has been going on, that might get other people to start paying attention to the larger picture we've been talking about?
Yes. So we can look at Anheuser-Busch, the complete... You have Americans, blue-collar Americans, flyover country in particular, used to drink Bud Light. I never liked the beer personally, but I know a lot of my friends used to, but none of them do anymore. So that was one reaction. They lost $27 billion in market value. Target was next. It went down, right? Adidas next. And so all these big corporations are pushing this ESG, this wokeism at the top, and Americans are starting to actually come together and fight back. They're fighting back with their wallet. They're not buying, and they're spreading the word. And in fact, you got crazy people in the mainstream media calling the people who are boycotting terrorists. It's really funny. They're just boycotting because they're not supporting an organization that is supporting, like you said, the destruction of families. They're not going there anymore. There was a great video yesterday. Armenian families in a town in California, the West Coast, were out protesting because families are very important to them. Protesting against Antifa and wokeism, going to local school, whatever. And Armenia has, 100 years ago, has this genocide history to them. So even if you're fourth or fifth generation from your grandparents or great-grandparents or whatever it was, they know what the fight really is about. The Armenian fathers went to fisticuffs with Antifa and were beating them up. The police had to come in, and like Antifa doesn't know... They're not smart to know, like, hey, we're going to pick on this group of people. They picked on the wrong group of people.
Yeah.
And this now is spreading around, and they might do it with another group of people from somewhere else, Africa, South America, whatever. And they have different cultures. And Armenia has a scar in it. And so when they try to take away their children or destroy their children or turn their, gender, change them, transition them or whatever, that was a bridge too far. Armenians fight back. And we're going to see more of this, not less of this. And I think wokeism and LGBT is going to be out of business by next year, personally. I'm looking at it as a kind of 1980s Cabbage Patch doll, which was aimed at girls. They got to have a $50 doll. $50 is a lot of money in 1985. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like akin to $500 today. And that went, that craze went, those collector items went up for 3 years, and then it died and never came back.
See, I think what you're describing there is going on. It's percolating through all the communities that actually value and understand what can I put it, the importance of the responsibilities of parenting and family life. That is, in fact, where we get our understanding of our sovereignty. Because what are parents? They're sovereigns within the household. And they're sovereigns within the household that then are exerting their sovereignty in a way that has first to take account of the good of the whole, including, as we all learn, putting the priority on making sure you can preserve the household so that you're working enough and doing the things that will bring in that wherewithal. And the other is making sure you're raising up children who get a sense of those responsibilities from you and therefore take them on behalf of the family as they will have to in the world. I think that's the best training for self-government there is. I think part of the attack on the family is to destroy that training ground.
And now the people are fighting back. And you got to realize a lot of people, I have a lot of Chinese friends, good American Chinese friends, they fled communism for a reason. Mm. I know one mother who not only fled, she went to California in 2017. She saw the signs of Marxism in California. She moved to Hawaii during COVID. She saw signs of Marxism. She now moved to Florida with her 10-year-old daughter and her husband. So I'm seeing there, you know, these foreign cultures who actually seen this despotism, right? Like in Venezuela and other parts of the world, they are recognizing the signs before Americans do, long before Americans do, and they're fighting back. But what's happening now is we have, you know, Americans are consumers. We're the greatest consumers in the world, right? We've gone into the TV culture, the advertising culture. I was born and raised above New York City. I lived in Manhattan 30 years. I know a lot of people on Madison Avenue and TV and stuff. I'm an American all the way in that respect. But now the people realize, wait a second, you've gone way too far. You now taking your wokeism and you come into my living room with these different advertising brands. And you know what? We're going to fight back. And they're fighting back. So I think you're having two dynamics happen at the same time. And I'm loving what I'm seeing.
I agree with that. And I'm loving what I'm seeing in that regard as well. It seems to me that it's kind of a reawakening of what I think of as the ornery spirit of ordinary Americans throughout our history. Because they knew that they had certain responsibilities. And when you came in a way that undermined or challenged their acquittal of those responsibilities, they fought back. And fighting doesn't always mean going to arms at all. It means they resist what you're selling. They won't take the sidelining that you mean to push off on them. I think that explains the reaction, for instance, to the assault against the boards of education that were trying to promote this stuff as if parents have no responsibility. And I think nothing aroused, I think, more individual indignation and anger, except perhaps for the effort to indoctrinate 6 and 7 year olds in human sexuality. These reactions suggest that what is at the core, I think, of the whole American identity, when we think of it in terms of the founding and everything, is a notion that we owe something to what is right and righteous. That as a fruit of the premise that we have God-endowed rights. And God-endowed rights means understanding of what it is right for us to do, that no other human being or government has the right to forestall because it is the result of the provision of God's will and law. I think that leads to a population that at the end of the day is willing to stand its ground when you start pushing against that which is fundamentally their responsibility to God and to a higher power than any government. Am I making sense?
Yeah, free will all the way. I'm with you. I read a really interesting sidebar article this morning. It talked about states are now under fear. So we're in June. It's technically kind of like American summer from Memorial Day to Labor Day. And schools are going to start again up in September. And guess what's happening? Teachers are quitting en masse. And the states can't figure out how they're breaking the contracts early. They're leaving. Say enough's enough. They do not want to be in the middle of it. Not every teacher that's in a union wants to push this woke agenda, critical race theory, or anything else, and they've had enough. And they're fighting back by walking away. And walking away is a very powerful thing. And states are trying to figure out how to find them, as if finding them is a choke collar on them to keep them in schools that they hate. Why would you force anybody into an environment they hate being in? They're not going to perform at a top level at all.
I am hoping that this whole thing, at the end of the day, will settle out into a recognition that we've strayed much too far toward the notion that schooling is the government's prerogative and parents should butt out. That's where they have led us to. I think it comes as a surprise to a lot of parents to realize that, but maybe it's because they haven't been paying close enough attention to what's going on in the schools. Now that they are, do you think it's going to lead? Because I don't think, my parents certainly didn't take the approach that what was going on in school was none of their business. They stayed rather on top of it. And if they saw unsatisfactory results coming through in me, they went and asked somebody, what the heck is going on here? And what are you going to do about it? I think there are still a lot of Americans like that. It's just that what has been going to an extreme comes to them. Because when they were sidling up to us, doing it bit by bit, it wasn't as obvious. But I think this whole reaction could lead to a very good result as Americans realize liberty begins at home. It begins in respect for that parental responsibility. It begins in the local communities and so forth. And when you have a national movement trying to force on you the abandonment of those responsibilities, you have to respond. I think they've overplayed their hand in that regard, and I'm praying that we'll see a response that, because it is rooted at the local level, will become a nationally affected response. Do you think?
Yeah, I do. Let's talk about it. 1970, like my father, again, saw World War II as the youngest in his family, came to the United States. His parents said, you shouldn't be part of the rebuilding. He met his wife, my mother, also Norwegian. He's a farmer. She's from a shipping dynasty. They meet a Norwegian wedding. They go on with their lives, and they have, you know, five kids. I'm the fourth in the family. In 1970, my father recognized communism being taught inside the public school in Westchester County, Bronxville, New York, born and raised. He did not like that. He went to the principal, sat down for a 30-minute, and read the riot act to the principal, basically, you know, not threatening him, but saying, what the hell are you doing? You know, we're trying to defeat communism, and you're bringing it into the schools. That is crazy. So he challenged them then. Like you said, your parents did the same thing. My parents did the same thing as well. They're from that generation. I think that's remarkable. As a father of a vaccine-injured kid, I'm going to say COVID's got a couple silver linings in it. One, they've overplayed their hand. Yeah. Two, we're going to learn who they are. They overplayed their hand in Ukraine, in our school system. Think about all of this. At least 2.5 million kids have left the public school system in the last 3 years. 2.5 million. That's a big number, and there's going to be more. Mm-hmm. Why? Because now parents are not only looking at the COVID vaccine saying, hey, does my child really need 26 vaccines in the first 3 of his life? For what? Does he need 52 vaccines by the time he's 5? Does he need 80 or 100 vaccines by the time 18? Their answer is no, no, and no. They're waking up to this, and now they're starting to see the connection between autism and vaccines, which was erased. The CDC spent $25 million to erase signals, you know, in the data and destroy data to discredit that angle. Well, now the parents are waking up to the fact that if you get too many jabs, forget the COVID bioweapon, but if you get too many jabs, your child has a very good chance of having peanut allergies, ADHD, all kinds of things, some kind of chronic illness, in the worst case, autism. And they're starting to recognize this. So you're going to see the collapse in big medicine and big pharma. You're going to see the collapse of the CDC, in my opinion, collapse of big education. It is all coming to an end in some form. Now, I read a different story today, which I find interesting. The EU is running out of money. Well, why is that important? Well, if they run out of money in Washington and in Europe, they can't, what, bribe anybody anymore. They can't have, they can't bribe these big corporations, whatever. When the banking system collapses, and it's going to, because the resetters want to do it, it's going to expose, it's like a Ponzi scheme, it'll expose everything. It will expose the entire fraud, and everyone will be able to see how connected everything is in the world of big everything. And I think that is where we're going. So that's also going to be a massive break in the psyche. You know, we've been living in a kind of financial fraud for 100 years, and people will actually educate themselves on this. And that is an opportunity to wake them up.
See, and I think that that is awakening is possibly, and I think of it in my, from my own perspective, as a kind of God-intended consequence. Because very often, when God's involved, he's doing things to wake you up. He's not going to do them for you, but he's going to try to wake you up so you realize what you must do for yourself. And I think that that's precisely the scenario that we've been put through. And I hope and pray, because I see signs, that a surprising return to what I called the previously the ornery nature. That is to say, ornery, by the way, is a word that comes from ordinary. And so you can see the connection between the ordinary folks who have the backbone then to stand for their responsibilities when a government or anybody else is trying to say no. And I think that we may be in an era where these people have pushed things so far that they have reawakened that salutary, ornery quality, and people are standing in defense of what, at the end of the day, they regard as themselves. Because when you push against the family, push against the parental responsibilities in that context, you are pushing against what a lot of people identify as the core of their very being, not the being of some other creatures. This was a wonderful discussion. Thank you so much for the writing you have done. And I hope that you'll be willing to come back so that we can explore further, because you have dealt with these things in a detailed complexity sometimes that I think is absolutely necessary to understanding. God bless you, and thank you for coming on the show. We're out of time. We'll be right back after this.